Welcome to another episode of Jamaican Gangster. On today's episode, we are featuring Norris Nembhard, known everywhere as Dido. If you are not following us, we would be honored if you would consider doing so. It costs you nothing to hit that button so that you will be notified every time we release a new episode. Now, let's get into it. The north coast of Jamaica does not look like a place where empires are buried, sent, and stretches green and unbothered along the Caribbean Sea, the kind of parish that gets described in tourist brochures as lush, as tranquil, as the garden parish of the island. The roads that cut through it, past churches and fruit trees, and small communities where everyone knows the name of everyone else's grandmother. Ocho Rios sits on its shoreline and pulls cruise ships in by the dozens. Cardiff Hall sits quieter, a stretch of fine houses near the water, the kind of address that signals a man has done well for himself without having to say so. Norris Nembhard had done very well for himself. He owned trucks. He owned construction equipment. His companies moved materials and built things and employed people and generated the kind of visible, tangible economic presence that a parish points to with genuine pride. He donated to communities. He gave where others did not give, in cent. And his name carried the weight of a man who had built something real and used it to benefit people around him. Church people respected him. Business people respected him. Ordinary families in the parish respected him. The parish knew. The parish always knew. But respecting what a man shows you and saying aloud what you suspect about the rest of him are two entirely different acts in Jamaica. In St. Anne in the 90s and early 2000s, one of those acts was safe and the other was not. So people respected Dido loudly and kept the other thing quiet, folded somewhere beneath the daily weight of living in a place where powerful men had long memories and short patience for betrayal. What Dido had built on the legitimate side was real. That was never in question. The trucks existed. The construction work existed. The charitable giving was genuine, and the people who benefited from it were genuine. That is precisely what made the other architecture so durable. A man everyone can point to and say, "Look what he has done for us," is a man who is very difficult to move against. Every donation was a wall. Every employment was a gate. The business empire was not a cover story. It was a fortress. And behind it, quietly, precisely, and without the visible street violence that defined the downtown dons of Kingston, Dido had built something else entirely. The go-fast boats do not look like much in daylight when they are sitting in a bay. They are long, low, and extremely fast, built for one purpose, which is to cover open water at speeds that make interception genuinely difficult. In the Caribbean, where the sea between Jamaica and Colombia is deep and wide and largely unpatrolled at the right hours, a fleet of go-fast boats operated by men who know the water is not a fleet that announces itself. It is a fleet that moves and is gone. The Operation Dido ran did not move cocaine through Kingston. It did not use the ports that law enforcement watched most closely. It went around all of that entirely. Colombian vessels would meet the go-fast boats in open Caribbean waters, transferring loads in the darkness between one country's reach and another's. Then the boats came back, running hard, and landed on the northeast coast of Jamaica, under stretches of shoreline that were not lit up with cruise ship terminals and tourist infrastructure. The cocaine came ashore in St. Anne and the parishes around it. From there it moved north, toward Florida, through networks that had been built and tested and refined across years of operation. The scale was not small. The pipeline was not improvised. This was a logistics operation, carefully structured, run with the discipline of a man who also managed trucking routes and construction schedules and understood that the difference between a business that lasts and one that collapses is the quality of the systems behind it. And for a long time, the systems held. The people on the ground, the men in the boats, and the men on the shore, and the men who watched certain coastlines at certain hours, they understood what silence was worth. In St. Anne, the silence around Dido was not the silence of ignorance. It was the silence of calculation. Communities near the landing zones had long learned that some questions drew no answers, and that some men's business was best left unexamined. Children grew up knowing his name, the way they knew the names of the hills around them, as a permanent feature of the landscape, something that had always been there and was not going anywhere. The parish knew. The parish always knew. In June of 2004, the world that had allowed Dido to operate in plain sight began to change shape. President George W. Bush, acting under the Foreign Narcotics Kingpin Designation Act, officially named Norris Nembhard as an international drug kingpin. The designation was not a Jamaican legal proceeding. It was a unilateral American declaration that placed Dido on the same federal architecture that the United States used to target cartel leaders, narco financiers, and transnational trafficking organizations. It froze any assets he held in United States jurisdiction. It made it a criminal offense under American law for any U.S. person or entity to do business with him, and it placed the full weight of the DEA's attention, resources, and international partnerships directly onto the north coast of Jamaica. He was not alone on that list. Liebert Ramcharan, another north coast figure, was designated alongside him. The fact that two men from the same stretch of Jamaican coastline appeared on the same federal designation in the same action told the DEA a story about geography, about the northeast coast as a narco corridor, about the Caribbean shipping lanes as an active front in the American war on drugs. The Garden Parish was now on a federal map. Back in St. Anne, Dido had a choice to make. And the choice he made was not to flee, not to go underground, not to abandon the Cardiff Hall address and the business fronts and the community presence that had protected him for so long. He stayed. He maintained. He carried himself the way a man carries himself when he believes that the legal system, properly handled, is a tool like any other. Then he was arrested. The Horizon Remand Center sits outside the manicured world of Cardiff Hall, like a blunt statement. It is where remand prisoners wait, sometimes for years, while courts move. At the pace, courts move. Dido arrived there not as a broken man, but as a man who had retained the best legal talent in Jamaica. His lawyers were not just good. They were the kind of lawyers who understood constitutional arguments, extradition treaties, procedural mechanics, and the specific ways that a determined defense can slow a process that a foreign government is trying to accelerate. For 4 years, the extradition proceedings crawled. Motion followed motion. Legal challenge followed legal challenge. The American side pushed. The Jamaican courts moved carefully. Every new filing bought time. Every procedural question opened another procedural question. The lawyers earned their fees, and then some. The Jamaican legal system, which is not a weak system, became the arena in which Dido fought the United States government to something close to a standstill. 4 years. 4 years in the Horizon Remand Center while the case wound through the Jamaican judiciary, while American prosecutors waited, while the DEA watched a man they had publicly designated as an international kingpin sit in a Jamaican facility and use the law to hold the line. Outside those walls, his assets sat frozen. His companies continued in various states of operation or suspension. His name continued to move through St. Anne. The people who had benefited from his generosity had not stopped remembering it. The people who understood what he actually ran had not stopped knowing it. The silence around him remained intact, even from inside a remand facility, even under the pressure of a federal designation. That is the particular power of a man who has spent decades building in both directions at once. The legitimate world does not simply evaporate because the other world is under siege. Then came the morning of July 11, 2008. His lawyers were in a Jamaican courtroom. They had new motions. They had arguments to make. They had every reason to believe the proceedings were continuing on the same slow, contested timeline they had managed for 4 years. The legal machinery was turning, and they were at the controls. they were not at the Horizon Remand Center. In the early hours, quietly, without announcement, Jamaican authorities moved Norris Nembhard, not to another facility, not to a different holding location within the system. They moved him to a waiting United States federal aircraft. The paperwork was done. The handover was executed. By the time his lawyers stood up in court that morning to present their new motions, their client was airborne. He was gone. The courtroom realization of what had happened arrived the way certain things arrive in legal proceedings. Not with drama, but with a cold, flat understanding that the ground had shifted and there was no retrieving what had just been lost. 4 years of motions, 4 years of procedural architecture, 4 years of keeping the American extradition machine from completing its task. And it had ended, not with a ruling, but with a movement so carefully timed that the defense never had the chance to respond. In American federal custody, the legal arithmetic changed entirely. American courts, American prosecutors, DEA evidence built across years of surveillance and informant testimony and financial investigation. Dido faced the full weight of what the United States government does to men it has designated as kingpins, and then waited 4 years to touch. He was convicted. He was sentenced. He went to federal prison. The parish knew. The parish always knew. But knowing and witnessing the consequence of knowing are two different things. And for the communities that had lived inside the silence of his saint, an operation, watching the man who had funded community centers and employed local workers disappear into the American federal system, had its own particular weight. Power does not simply leave when a man is taken. It lingers. It sits in the places it used to occupy. It reminds people that it was there, even after it is gone. Dido served his time. In 2015, he came back. Return from an American federal sentence in Jamaica is not a quiet event. It carries its own gravity, its own set of eyes, its own institutional memory. The Financial Investigations Division had not been idle. The FID, which is Jamaica's specialized asset recovery and financial crime agency, had been building its own case across the years of his incarceration, tracing the property lines and the company structures and the vehicles and the bank trails that connected Norris Nembhard's legitimate wealth to the pipeline that the United States government had already proven in federal court. The legal war that followed his return was not about freedom. He had served that sentence. It was about everything else. Nearly $200 million in frozen assets, prime real estate in St. Anne, the kind of property that sits on good land near the water and does not lose its value. Construction equipment, vehicles, the accumulated material evidence of decades of building in both directions. The FID moved through it systematically, filing, proceeding, seizing, and proving in Jamaican courts what American courts had already proven about the source of that wealth. The trucking company that had been a fortress was now evidence. The Cardiff Hall property that had been an address of prestige was now a court exhibit. The charitable donations were already spent, already given, already absorbed into the communities that had received them. But the assets that remained, the ones that could be legally traced and seized, the FID took them. It took a long time. It required Jamaican court proceedings that moved with the same slow deliberation that had once served the defense. But at the end of it, nearly $200 million was gone. The man who had rewritten what a Jamaican Don looked like, who had replaced the garrison enforcer image with the image of a philanthropist businessman, who had operated a Colombian cocaine pipeline at industrial scale without firing a single shot in a Kingston street, ended up losing everything to the same institutional machinery he had once used as a shield. And in St. Anne, the silence that had protected him for so long settled back over the landscape. The lanes near Cardiff Hall looked the same. The hills looked the same. The stretch of coastline where go-fast boats once came ashore in the dark was still beautiful in the early morning. Salt smell and quiet water and the kind of light that makes a place look like it has no history at all. But the parish knew. the parish always knew. And the parish would not forget the man who proved that the most dangerous kind of power is the kind that looks like generosity. That was the story of Norris Nembhard, known as Dido. If this episode moved you, if it taught you something, if it kept you up, share it. Follow us if you have not already, and stay close, because on the next episode of Jamaican Gangster, we are going somewhere you are not ready for.